So, welcome to Greek Club at Concordia Seminary. We are reading through the letter of St. Paul to the Galatian Christians. By the way, I had one brave soul who said, okay, when you're done with Galatians, do Hebrews. So you guys let me know. I mean, we could go like to 1 John, which is more of, you know, see Jesus love, love Jesus love. And I say that to make Dr. Shuckard mad. And But we'll have some weeks yet in Galatians. So we're in 4:1. There's some not too difficult, but nice illustrative material here for language and grammar and stuff like that. So we'll just go ahead and get started with verse 1. Paul writes, Lego de f hazan kronon ha kleronamas napias estin uden dia fere dulu kyrias panton on. And maybe we'll get verse 2 since it's one sentence. Alla hippa epitropus estin kai oikonamus achrites pra desmeas tu patras. So, now I am saying, typically translated, indicating something of a new unit, depending on how you interpret sort of theologically. Now, huzan there is just the accusative singular, probably neuter of huzas, which is a pronoun called a correlative pronoun, and it means as much as many. So, literally, upon as much a thing. And with kronon, it means for as much time, something like that. So, for as much time, now we're still looking for a verb, and it's estin. Subject has the article, er, right, here in 4:1. For as much time as, we have to put that in English, the heir is a baby, this probably means minor here, but it is actually the term that normally would mean a very small child. Now we have uden diafere. Diafero means to be different than. It can have an impersonal meaning. It doesn't. It matters, or it doesn't matter. As you may know, this is actually the root from which we get ultimately adiaphoron. So diaphero means to make a difference, and adiaphero means to not make a difference. And so an adiaphoron is something that literally doesn't make a difference, so to speak. But we'll take it here not impersonally, but personally. He is no different. And now, do you remember that after comparative adjectives, you can put just a genitive noun or pronoun, and this is called the genitive of comparison? So we have here, to be different of a slave. But just because Greek does comparison using a genitive modifier, that's why the verb here takes a genitive. He is different than a slave. And now we actually have to fit uden in there somehow. And this is just from udes, and it would parse as accusative singular neuter. And if you had to label it, which, as you know, Greek loves to label things, you'd probably call it an accusative of respect. In no way, with respect to nothing. So he is different than a slave in no respect. Right? And then, Lord of all. Now, who can tell me what own is? Anybody got an idea?
Participle.
Yeah, the participle from?
Amen.
Amen, from the linking verb. So, being Lord of all. Right? And the referent is the unexpressed, well, I guess it would be heir, or perhaps the he in diafere, predicate position. And normally translated here with what kind of a force might make good sense?
Concessive?
Yeah, concessive. So you unweasel it, instead of just being Lord of all, you say, even though he is Lord of all. So it's kind of a nice little case study on what to do with a predicate position participle. And then, you know me, this drives Dr. Veltz crazy, I always like to ask what kind of genitive modifiers we have. So we have Lord of all. Okay, so you tell me, Lord of all. What is the of all? What's the force of that? He said, in a verbally based way. Is there an... It's an objective genitive. Because there's a verb, to be Lord, right? Kyrieuo. So, Lord of all, what you're saying is he lords over everyone. He's the Lord, the one who lords all. Okay. Now, if you don't want to be that fancy, I suppose you could call it Lord of all. You could call it a genitive of being lorded over. But then you'd be like Dr. Dan Wallace, who had like 9,000 categories for the genitive, right? So, we won't go there. So, let's do that part and we'll clean it up. Now I am saying, for as much time as the heir is a baby or a child or a minor, he is different in no way than a slave, even though he is Lord of all. Okay, so he's not this, Allah, rather, now this is easier, and you might have to look up the vocab, but stewards and managers, or managers and stewards, depending on how you want to render that, he is until, akhris plus a genitive means until the prothesmias, appointed time, of the father. Woohoo! Another genitive modifier. Okay? Now think about appointed time. There is a verb, actually, that's cognate, if you will, or related to the noun prothesmia. Anybody have an idea what that verb might be? It would be pro... Right. Protithime. Which means to fix or appoint, or to fix or appoint in advance. Okay? Right? So this would be a subjective genitive. The father fixed or appointed the time in advance. So, and then Paul will pick that up in verse 4 when he talks about the fullness of time. So, verse 2 again, rather, he is under, managers and stewards, or stewards and managers, until the Father's appointed time, or the appointed time of the Father. Okay? And Paul is setting up the comparison, and in verse 3 he'll say, so also. And then the other shoe will actually drop sort of directly. Questions about verse 1 and 2? Yeah, Jim?
I have a real quick one. When it talks about the Father's appointed time, the kleronomos, is that errors in when the Father's appointed time is when the Father dies, or when the Father decides to give over the shtuff?
Let's see. Probably the latter. But what's interesting about the language here, and this actually I think has implications for exegesis and theology, the language of minority, you know, being too young, because that's the language in chapter 3, right? You're under a pedagogue, right? A paedagogos. And the whole issue is just growing up, letting enough time pass until you grow up. Here, what Paul actually is about to do is leave the image of minority and actually develop the image of slavery. See? So it's a good question, but it's interesting how the metaphor kind of shifts with verse 3. So what is Paul is really interested in talking about, not just growing up and becoming mature, but the status of being enslaved, from which you have to be redeemed. So the answer is probably the latter, Jim. But as the language continues, it actually shifts. He leaves the language of minority and age, and he leaves it behind. And really, for the first time, he hints at it in chapter 3, for the first time in Galatians, the whole question of freedom comes up, right? And being enslaved. It's interesting how it sort of holds back until you get to chapter 4, and then it really bursts forth in full flower. So, good. Other questions? Yeah, Dave?
The subject of gender, the time of the father.
Yeah.
Or, yes.
The appointed subject. Time?
Mm-hmm. What, is the reason why it's a subjective genitive and not objective is the father appointed the time?
Yep, he's the one who fixes it. Right. Okay. Yep.
And then earlier with being Lord of all things, the Lord is not acting. Is that why it's the objective?
Right. Right. Yeah. Well, let's see.
Or why would it, so
yeah, he is lording.
Lorded.
Yeah, he's lording over or being Lord of all. So the all then is the object of the action of lording. Right? Yeah, okay. Yeah, good, good. Now this is when we say fixing the time, this is not like the Texas expression, fix him to do something. You know, that's a little different. Right. That's mellow, actually. Plus infinitive, yeah. Right. I think they spoke that way more in South Achaia. I think. Isn't that right? Tim, you kind of know a lot about Greek. Yeah, right. So, right. Okay, good. All right. Verse 3. Hutos kahimes, hata amen napioi, hippa ta stoikea tu kosmu, amitha de dulomenoi. And again, now the comparison. There's not a kathos just as at the beginning of the chapter, but there could be, and now we have so also. So also we, emphatic pronoun, right? We, Paul including himself with his hearers here. When we were babies, under the world's elemental things, you know, huge exegetical debate alert, you know. We won't solve that one here. Under the world's first principles, we had been enslaved. And again, I mentioned it a minute ago. Notice the shift to strong slavery language. Amitha is it's a deponent form. It's the imperfect of amen. So imperfect, indicative, middle deponent, first plural. So we were. And then de du lo meno, you can see, probably guess it is from du lao. And it's a perfect participle. You can see the duplication on the front, the de, right? And the accent mark, oddly enough, would also clue you in because it's on the penult, not the anti-penult. Trivia, grammar trivia. What do you call a participle that's linked closely with a linking verb? What kind of construction? A periphrastic participle, right? Right. Your board of elders will give you a raise if you know this. And it's the imperfect plus the perfect passive, so we had been enslaved. Okay. So it's probably periphrastic because it would be too hard to say the pluperfect passive of du lao. The grammars say, actually, this is when the periphrastic construction first arose, is that it was too hard to say that, you know, that form from the fifth principal part. And of course, for us English speakers, we think it's all too hard to say. So also we, emphatic, when we were babies, we had been enslaved under the first principles of the world. That's this great debate. There is a verb, stoikeia. By the way, look back in... Stoikeo. Look back in chapter 2. I'm pretty sure it's back there. Verse 14. Oh, no, I'm sorry. I take it back. That's a different verb. My bad, as the young people say. Right? So, right. Do young people still say that?
My bust.
Yeah, my bust?
My bust.
Bust. Oh, my bust. Okay. Is that like a statue of a head or something? Yeah, my bust. That's right. Yeah. Okay. Groovy, man. Groovy. Well, the verb does mean to walk in line with. Okay. Well, I think it's later in Galatians. That's where it is. Doesn't matter. So is this under the world's way of walking? You know, or the basic way that the world walks? Again, it's a great mystery. And so, or is it just the world, what the world possesses? So that, you know, to label this genitive is really dependent on how you actually understand the reference of stoikeia, which is clearly bad because it enslaves you, right? And you need to be actually redeemed from that condition, which God has done for us, right? But grammatically, it's not so bad. We just don't exactly know what the stoikeia are. And it's a philosophical term. I mean, it occurs in different contexts in both discussions of physics, like the natural world, the physical world, and also in metaphysical discussions. So it's a big deal. By the way, if you ever want a really hardcore commentary on Galatians, it's expensive and it's old, but it's really good and it's still in print, is the one by Ernst DeWitt Burton, It's almost 100 years old. It's in the old ICC series, and he has long discussions of everything you can imagine. So that's really a great commentary. Grammatically, I think it's not too bad. Questions about verse 3? Yeah, Will, go ahead.
This ametha?
Yes?
You said that's imperfect deponent?
I think so.
No. Is there any reason why it can't be amen? Like, is there a...
Both forms actually occur.
No, is there any difference in translation?
I don't know. Not that I know of. Okay. Yeah, I just you have amen and you have ametha. Either one can. In fact, let's just take a look. There's a flag on the play, as Dr. Bartel likes to say. There it is, see? The variant is amen, right? Mm-hmm. So some manuscripts, and I don't know if it's, or even if anybody does know if it, how to explain the use between the imperfect form, the deponent, and the active. So, yep. English is like this. You know, we have all kinds of alternate forms depending on where you're from. Right? Texas, East Coast. Yeah, whatever.
I have one more question.
Yes, please.
Why would you make this, we had been enslaved? Why wouldn't you just say we were enslaved?
It's the combination of the imperfect and the perfect participle passive. So, let's see, we were enslaved. You could use like the imperfect and the aorist participle. Okay. It's an attempt to kind of get that ongoing result in the past time into the translation. Yeah. So I actually toyed with the idea. I don't think it's right, but you could actually theoretically take de dulo menoi as a substantive. We were enslaved people. You know. But again, that would try to communicate at least that ongoing result of a completed past action. So, I do think the English translations typically take it as we were enslaved, but I think it's a little stronger than that. So, good questions. All right, verse 4. Isn't this great? I mean, look, it's a sunny day. They cleaned up the room, and we're reading Greek. I mean, you know, with your shielder on it, it just doesn't get any better than that, right? Verse 4. Hata de eothen ta pleroma tu kronu ex ap estelen hasteas tan huianautu genamenon ek ginaikos genamenon hipponamu. We'll finish verse 5. Hina tus hipponamon ex agorase hina ten huiothesian apolabomen. This is a great sense to diagram. You know, it's a good exercise because it's easy and you get a lot of payoff, if I can say it that way. So you start with a little temporal clause, but when the fullness of time came, or perhaps had come, because the main verb is an aorist indicative, so you want to get that when clause before that happened. Fullness of time, you know, people talk about what kind of, well, people who are geeks talk about what kind of gender this is. It could be objective, that God filled the time. See? But it's hard to know exactly what the image is, right? But so we won't tarry over that. The sense is tolerably clear. And then we have an error from ex apostello, which only occurs, if I'm remembering right, this particular compound verb only occurs in Paul and Galatians here. God sent out the son of him, his son. Now we have two participles from ginomai, aorist participle, deponent, middle deponent, and it's masculine singular accusative, so the referent is son, but they're both in predicate position. And you can try to give a predicate dependent clause translation. The one that, if you're going to do it that way, the one that seems to fit maybe best, as I've tried to, is to take them as participles of manner or means. So he sent forth his son by the son being from a woman, by the son being under the law. The other way to go, of course, is sometimes predicate position participles in context just actually seem to be acting as if they were attributive adjectival. You know, sometimes those are called supplementary participles. So the translations typically sort of gloss over this. They just translate, sent forth his son born of a woman. Notice that it's not actually genao. I don't think born is a wrong translation. It's ginomai. Right? But you can have that meaning in context. So for grins, we'll take them as expressing manner or means. By coming from a woman, this is how it happened. By coming under the law. Now we have two hinas, which, you know, very often in Paul express purpose, and I think that's what they're doing here. In order that he, the son, might buy out of slavery. Remember the image of slavery, those under the law. In order that we might apolambano, there's the aorist subjunctive from apolambano. You can see the long connecting vowel in apolabo men. In order that we might receive adoption or sonship. And so what's cool here is that there's kind of two moves, and maybe we'll stop with this, is that it isn't just that God wanted to move us from the status of from slavery to free, because in the ancient world, to become a freedman was not, or a freed woman was not necessarily all that great of a deal. In fact, there's unscrupulous slave owners would work their slaves to death, and then when they got to be really decrepit, they'd set them free, because that way they were under no social obligation to take care of them. See? There's no social security, you know, there's no nothing. You don't have any skills to pay the bills, so to speak. So God did two things, right? And I think that's why we have two purpose clauses. He actually took us from slavery into the status of free, and then from the status of free to the status of adoption. Right? And so, yeah, it's yeah, good comment. It's very cool, actually. And it's all in the grammar, which is why if you want the glory, you come to Greek and Hebrew Club and lectionary lunch on the third floor at Concordia Seminary. Taste the glory. Time to stop.
Shall we then call this the upper room, sir?
Huh?
Shall we then call this the upper room?
This is the upper room. Sad to say, this is the upper room.
Hey Jeff, I have a question.
Tim, yeah, go ahead.
The line of thought is one, because when you're reading verses 1 through 3, you're kind of thinking, he's talking about going from unbeliever to believer, and then when you go to verse 4, it's more like the time before Christ came to the time Christ came. So, does that cause us to reread verses 1 through 3 and think not believer, unbeliever, but he's talking about faith, meaning the time before Christ, or not?
I think it runs the other way when you compare it to chapter 3.
Okay.
See, because in chapter 3,